Hey, Valley fans, you're listening to the March to the Arch podcast. Is your team going to win? Make some noise!
This is the March to the Arch podcast, your place for Missouri Valley Conference news, talk, and takes. To episode 5 of the March to Arch podcast in this 2021-2022 Missouri Valley Conference season. It is still preview season, and we are breaking down the Bradley Braves and the Northern Iowa Panthers. We are also joined by assistant coach Seth Tuttle for an unreal interview, just talking his time as a player, his time as a coach, and we definitely get into the 2021-2022 Panther team. But before that, how are we doing today, Baker?
We're doing awesome. It's Christmas Day. It almost feels like we got the preseason standings, preseason awards. I mean, things are cooking, Vance.
I couldn't agree more. This is one of those great days that you schedule, or no, you circle on the calendar. So today we are recording on October 20th, the evening after the preseason rankings, the preseason all-conference teams have come out for the Missouri Valley Conference. I mean, it's just one of those great days. Listen to the media call. Dove into the polls. We're going to just have some quick reactions here, but what a great day, Baker.
Yeah, no, you know what, Vance, let's just dive right in. If you got it handy, let's just get right into the rankings and kind of let's do some reaction to it.
All right, so the voters for the Missouri Valley Conference 2021-2022 season picked the Drake Bulldogs to win the Missouri Valley Conference. After the Drake Bulldogs, it is Loyola, Northern Iowa, Missouri State, 5th, Southern Illinois, Bradley, Valparaiso, Evansville, Indiana State, and in 10th, Illinois State. Quick reactions, Baker.
So before we get into the top of the list, I mean, obviously my quick reaction is people not really having a lot of faith in my Redbirds, and this feels kind of like rock bottom for my team, which that's never fun. But in all seriousness, I think the expectation going in, and I think for both of us, was the top four was kind of set. It was just kind of going to be what order they put it in. And this was the order that I expected the media to put it in.
Yep. I don't know. I honestly, 6 through 10, I was kind of just doing a crapshoot there. Whenever I saw it come out, I saw the email and opened it up and kind of looked at the top four, and I was like, okay, makes sense. And then I kind of looked to the bottom, and the only thing that jumped out at me, and Baker, I swear, I do not try to pile on. I swear, you know, you're a friend. We do a podcast together. But the only thing that really jumped out to me.
Out with it, Vance. Come on.
Okay. The thing that jumped out to me is that Illinois State picked 10th, but the next closest one at 9 was Indiana State with more than double the votes.
This is rock bottom.
That was an indictment for me. I don't like to see it, obviously, for your sake and your mental health. But being sensitive to Illinois State, that honestly really jumped out at me.
Only one way to go from here, Vance. I mean, I think that this is kind of the culmination of this. There's just been that kind of negative cloud around this team, and to see it up front, it stinks. I mean, as a fan, I first thing I looked at, I was like, oh my God, we got doubled by the 9th place team. I mean, this is a group of media members who just have no faith in this team whatsoever. But you know what? There's only one way to go from here. It's up, and hopefully the team uses this as motivation. But yeah, you know, I agree with you. There's no good way to look at it.
And just moving from that bottom up, you know, Indiana State at 9, you know, kind of makes sense with the coaching change. I would say that naturally kind of drops you a couple spots.
Interesting team, though. I really am interested. That team's going to be fun to watch, I think.
I agree. And then you got Evansville, Valparaiso working our way down up. Honestly, like I said, you could kind of interchange a lot of these teams.
100%.
Not a lot of differentiation, even in the voting there. I thought from the beginning SIU was going to get picked 5th. I think they probably will finish 5th. Yep. And then you had the top four, and there wasn't really any surprises on where that top four landed. I think it all kind of made sense. And
I was curious who was going to be 2. I'll be honest with you. I had it Loyola too. I think you got to give them enough respect, but I was curious if the return of AJ Green was going to leapfrog them over Loyola, especially with Crutwig coming out, AJ Green coming in. I didn't know if they'd do that flip, but I'm kind of happy. I think that this, feels like the rankings feel right. Like I don't have a huge issue with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You kind of make the argument of like, if they didn't go with Drew Valentine to coach them and they went with an outsider, I think it probably does flip and you have UNI at two and Loyola at three, regardless of who came back.
I think you might be right.
Yep. So, that's the preseason poll, 1 through 10. Let's get into the preseason all-conference teams. So, first team and player of the year, A.J. Green. We've got Tyreek Key from Indiana State. Isaiah Mosley from Missouri State. You have Roman Penn from Drake. And Gage Prim from Missouri State. Before we get into second and third team, Baker, anything there that really jumps out at you?
Yes, absolutely. Lucas Williamson got hosed. Like, I'm sorry. The best defender in the league last year. He improved offensively. He had – the last thing we remember seeing him was shutting down Ayo Dosunmu from Illinois. Yep. It was one of the last lasting memories we saw of him, playing just insane defense in the NCAA tournament. I personally had him over Mosley. And that's where I thought this was going to land. I thought it was going to be – because to me, it felt like the argument was – I thought Lucas Williamson was going to be solidly in, actually. Like, I thought the argument was going to be Key and Mosley for that fifth spot.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but I thought Lucas Williamson was kind of a shoo-in.
Kind of another comment from the media call is that even head coach of Southern Illinois, Brian Mullins, who was at Loyola coaching before taking SIU, he said in the media call – hey, I'm no defender like Lucas Williamson, because there's an interchange between two coaches. But I mean, even Brian Mullins is saying he didn't defend like Lucas Williamson. So there you go. That's, you know, a little dabbing each other up, which is always fun to see on those media calls.
And Lucas was just so good. I mean, I thought that was the one thing that, like, I guess I can't get too terribly mad about it, but at the same time, I thought it was kind of egregious that Lucas Williamson was not. Let me ask you this. Who did you have as your five? I mean, for me, it was the difference. I had Mosley slip into second team.
Yeah, no, that's the two I would have flipped out, was Williamson for Mosley. I would have no issues. And
nothing against Mosley.
Absolutely. It's just more of, I mean, you nailed it. I mean, you had a Sweet 16, second best player on that team, you know, with Crutwig leaving. And yeah, that's where we are. Yeah. So let's move on to the second team. You've got Marcus Damask, Southern Illinois. You got Tank Kimfill from Drake. You got Ben Cricky from Valparaiso, Austin Fife from Northern Iowa, and then Lucas Williamson from Loyola.
Yeah, I mean, second team I don't have as big an issue with, especially as you get down to these other teams. Read off the third team first before we really talk about the others.
Yep. We've got Shamir Givens from Evansville, Jayshon Henry, Bradley, Lance Jones, Southern Illinois, Rink Mass from Bradley, and Braden Norris from Loyola.
Yeah. So I think the two that I was surprised with were actually the two guys from Bradley. I think Rink Mass is a good player. He had a great freshman year, and we'll talk about him soon when we do our Bradley preview, and as well as Jayshon Henry, great player as well. Looking at like a top 15 in the league, though, I probably wouldn't have them on either list. The Southern Illinois fellas getting on there, I have no problem with either one. Both really good players. I know you were a little bit wondering how Damask was going to get treated. I figured Lance Jones was probably going to be in the mix, but I know you were a little wondering about Damask.
Yeah, same. I'm glad to see him on second team. I think it makes sense, especially if, you know, we all know AJ Green is great, but however, you know, when you sit out a year and you don't play, like, how do you treat them when they come back due to injury? And I think that's a talking point that we've talked a lot on the side. And I thought, just as AJ Green went, so would Marcus Damask, you know, based on just essentially not having a last season to base anything off of.
I was happy, by the way, Shamar Givens getting a little bit of love from the media, getting on one of these teams just to kind of show the kind of season he had. And we'll get into him next week as well, because definitely one of those under-the-radar really good players in the league. And Braden Norris, also someone who had a really good year for Loyola at the point guard position. It was nice to see him get a little bit of a look. The couple people, though, that I had, And you can kind of piggyback on this with if you had anybody else that were missing. But Ugloc for Loyola, I thought, should have been on second team. I thought he's so good defensively, and I had him on my second team, which he didn't make any of them, which I thought was kind of a shame. And then Darnell Brody at Drake, I thought also could have been in the mix for maybe a third team sniff. So those were the two players that I had going into this.
Yeah, I mean, no one really that you haven't mentioned here that was on my radar. I'm not saying it was my radar, but it's also interesting. Like, if you're a media or SID or any of the voters, like, how do you treat a Donovan Clay or some of these?
Yeah, that's a great point. Talent-wise, I mean, he's definitely up there in the hunt. But interesting that he's going to be playing at Missouri State this year and playing against his old team. And we'll get into that when we get to the Missouri State preview. And the Valpo preview, we'll talk about that. Something I'm not a big fan of, but I totally agree with you. If you just want to look at the talent wise, he definitely should be in the mix.
Yep. So, a couple things to wrap up just this preseason announcement and all the preseason teams. For Drake, this is the first time they have been picked preseason number one, and they started keeping track of this in 1985. Kind of a cool accolade there. On the call, Commissioner Jeff Jackson did have a couple comments that he made and got some questions from the media. And a couple things I thought were interesting that do have impact on this season. So I think you saw this, Baker, and our listeners who follow the Valley a lot. With COVID, rescheduling is not really on the table. So essentially, if you cannot play a game based on COVID, you forfeit, essentially. That's kind of by the rule right now. However, a member of the media, and I honestly forgot who it was, asked, okay, so if all teams are 100% vaccinated and they have a COVID cancellation, what happens? I mean, they've done everything they could. We're not really doing contact tracing anymore, just as a society. What happens? And I believe Mike Kern said that, okay, in that instance, when everyone is 100% vaccinated, we've confirmed that, things of that nature, there is discretion at the commissioner level on cancellations when all parties are vaccinated, which I thought was interesting. And it leads into, there were a lot of questions about vaccination, which kind of surprised me in this call based on, status of vaccinations. And so, but I thought that was something that kind of stuck out to me of like, okay, if you can't play because of COVID, we all kind of, it's a known thing. It's a forfeit. But there is some discretion out there.
Interesting. No, I think I'm glad you brought that up because I didn't hear that. I don't want to, the whole vaccination thing, I don't want to.
Yeah. Hey, we're not going to do that here.
Yeah. No, that's not going to be this podcast, but I think that it kind of brings up something to my mind. Is just kind of something I was thinking about is once we get into, the booster that's coming out as well. I mean, does that ever come into play when it comes to full vaccination? Is that something we're talking about down the road as well? So I think that'll be a question for probably at the end of into 2022, but that's just something that it's interesting that, obviously the home office is navigating this the best that they can, going with what they know. And, I'm sure they're going to handle it the best way they can. So absolutely, that's all we can really say.
Yep. And then also a member of the media did ask about expansion, and it felt good that Commissioner Jeff Jackson said that, hey, we're kind of in a position of power and we are not desperate when it comes to expansion. So it's not like we're reacting because we have to. We're not desperate. Because I mean, I think if you're the AAC, you are desperate at this moment.
Oh, boy.
So, I thought that was interesting that, I really enjoyed that comment, from him, because that's kind of how I feel. Is there's a lot of people that want to expand, but just kind of like laid the groundwork of, we're not desperate to expand right now. We have a committee that assesses the landscape, and if the right team comes along, then we'll make the inquiries we need to.
I love that statement. I think that is a good kind of, we're going to stay proactive, but we're also, we're going to pick the right team. And it's because I'm sure, and I mean, the Valley, if you look at the landscape of the country, like you just talked about the AAC, I mean, the AAC is going to be rough when some of these teams leave. I mean, our old pals at Wichita are are in for a rude awakening with that league, which if I'm them, I'm praying to leave that league at this point. But, you know, there could be a lot of opportunity out there because all of a sudden the Missouri Valley is clearly in that just it's them, you know, the A-10 and Mountain West. And after the Power Six, it's those three and that's it.
Yeah.
So I love that we're keeping an open mind to some teams, but we're also, you know, we're also being proactive and looking. So yeah,
we don't need to go gobble up a bunch of teams just so we have a big conference. And that's
that's the thing. Like, you don't want to, like, you know, say like a team like an Omaha or Milwaukee that's been thrown around. You don't just say, oh, we need to get that 12th team. They both say they want to get in. Let's go get them.
Yeah.
No, we picked the right team.
I love that. So that was kind of my takeaways, probably more to come out from that. But yeah, like you said, this is kind of Christmas morning in anticipation of, you know, the non-conference real Christmas morning where some teams like aforementioned or the Northern Iowa that will break down is, you know, going to be playing on Christmas Day.
We're a couple weeks away. I mean, if you look at the schedule, I think, what is it? I think it's November 9th, I think, is when most teams are tipping off, correct? Am I right?
Yep. Yeah, you are.
Yeah, I know that's when Illinois State is. They tip off on – I just think to myself on November 9th, I mean, we're just a short time away. I mean, what, 20 days away from tip-off? This is awesome.
And we got some teams to break down, so let's get into it. All right, let's break down the Bradley Braves and their 2021-2022 Missouri Valley campaign. In Brian Warder's seventh season last year, they went 12-16, and in Missouri Valley Conference play, they were 6-12 after a Thursday night exit to the Southern Illinois Salukis. Baker, you know, quick recap on last year's Bradley Braves.
Yeah, you know what? Disappointing year for the Braves. It was a lot of hype going in. I think they were picked third to start the season behind the two big guns at the top. Really disappointing year going in with Childs coming back and. Never felt like they could get it going. They had that really tough loss early with Xavier and the non-con. And there was that game in Missouri as well, the one that they had that they should have won on the road at Missouri. And then after that Missouri game, it was, you know, they had a couple of good moments in the Valley, but then they went through a tough stretch. And then, as everybody knows, I mean, we can't really sugarcoat it. There was the situation in Missouri with some of the players where there were players suspended and then piled on top of that with injuries. Their bench was just incredibly short by the end of the season. They did have the one bright spot, by the way, with that win against Drake at the very end of the season. I don't know if you remember that one, but that was one of the last games that they ended up costing Drake the title with. Absolutely. That game, which was the only bright spot they had. Then they went to St. Louis and went down. But overall, just a disappointing year, especially with a guy like Childs in his senior season. Nothing but a disappointment for a Bradley fan.
Yeah, I know they're definitely trying to reset.
And they were swept by Illinois State.
Yeah, that does not help the cause either. And, you know, they were going for three Arch Madness wins in a row. So that is safe for another, for someone else to start potentially here in the future. But I know they're looking to the 2021-2022 season. So, like, what's some bright spots for the Bradley Braves? I know with the preseason rankings coming out, they're picked sixth. They had two people on the third team all-conference team. That would be Jayshon Henry and Rink Mast, who's coming off a great freshman campaign. So real quick, what's going on with the Braves in this upcoming season?
Yeah, it's kind of a lot of roster turnover this year. Let's go down the list real fast of the guys who left. We got Kingsby, Nolan, Childs, Thomas, East, McAdoo, and Hall all leaving for whatever reasons. So a lot of roster turnover going in this year, but you said it, you know, Rink Mast is definitely one of the key people. I think him and Ari Boya at the five is the, at least the most fun debate I have for Bradley when I talk to people. And I know we've talked about in the past is, what are your thoughts? I who do you think gets the bulk of the minutes between Ari Boya coming off the broken foot last year and Rink Mast? Who's going to get the most minutes at the five?
Well, I almost think that's a moot point that I would almost throw out. That's a great problem to have and to discuss right now. Because in the Missouri Valley Conference, when you have two fives that we're discussing who's going to get more minutes and that there's minutes to go around for two tall five men, I mean, that's a great problem to have in this conference, Baker.
Yeah, no, I think you're totally right too. And it'll be interesting to see kind of how it goes and how Wardle plays it, who starts and who doesn't. I know I've read a lot of people think Mast is going to come off the bench. Personally, I think that's a mistake. I would have him coming. I would have him in the starting five right away. But I can see the case you can make either way. But you know, you bring up a good point when you've got a league with guys like Prim, Brody, Fife. I mean, Crinky. Like there are so many Cricky. I'm sorry, not Crinky. Cricky. But there's so many good big guys in the league. And to have a guy like, you know, if say Mast gets in foul trouble, to have Ari Boya standing behind him, like, oh, hey, no problem. We're good to go.
Or if you can
that's
throw
such a good luxury to have.
Or, I mean, you know, kind of using some of your hockey terminology, if you have another line that's fresh all the time to throw at the Prims and the Brodies, you know, night in and night out, I mean, that's a huge positive for Bradley.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And you know what? It's interesting. You also have 10 fouls. 10 fouls when you get it. And you know, we joke about that because you don't think of Ari Boya and Rink Mast as guys you're going to waste fouls on. But
yep.
Having 10 fouls might be good at your disposal every once in a while. But looking at the team overall, I think that Jayshon Henry, obviously, just an insane athlete. He'll jump out of the gym. We've seen the highlights. For me, I think he can be one of the elite wing players in the league. I just think the three-point shot has got to improve. And that's my only criticism, because he can score, he can get his bucket, but I think consistency at the three-point shot is kind of the difference between him and Key and him and Mosley.
Speaking of threes, another one that I'm high on, and I know he's injured, got a little bit of injury bug last year with Ville Tavanainen, which I think he'll be back hopefully sometime in the non-con. But speaking of threes, he can fill it up pretty quickly and can change a game landscape, you know, on the flip of a coin. So Ville's another one that, you know, 2 years ago he had a great Arch Madness and really led him to that, or not led him, but was a big piece of that victory. So he's one that I always look to, that you got to have a defender on him at all times.
No, timely shooting. He spreads the floor. He's the game changer, that kind of Nate Cannell type role of the guy who can just fill it up from the outside. It'll be interesting to see how, you know, we talk about those four players, Boya, Mast, Henry, and Tavanainen, but then how are they going to blend with guys like Mikey Howell coming out of San Diego, guys like Leones, who's coming in from Mineral Area College, who was just a really good scorer. And from all accounts, Leones is supposedly going to be one of the best scorers coming into the league right away, which is going to be just another feather in the cap of Brian Wardle. But I think for me, Mikey Howell is probably going to be one of the most important newcomers on this team. He's a guard who is, you know, averaged 6 assists last year, 7 points a game almost. I think if he takes over that point guard role right away, I think that that's going to be huge for this team, because with a lot of weapons, and the thing is, you think of Bradley, they lose guys like Childs, and you wonder, do they have a lot of weapons? They do. They actually have a ton of weapons on this team, but I think you're missing that true point guard, and I think Mikey Howell can be that guy. I don't know how you feel about that.
No, I agree. And just looking at the makeup of what could be the starting five, so whether or not it's Rink Mast or Ari Boya, I mean, you've got three veterans surrounded by two JUCOs who, for all intents and purposes, can come in and ideally fill it up. So, I mean, they've got a good nucleus. It's going to be a lot on their bench, I think, this year. And that is what's going to dictate how far the Bradley Braves can go, getting outside of that, you know, sixth preseason, you know, rank that they got.
Yeah, and I wanted to mention a couple more guys real quick, just while we're on it, before we get to their non-con. Terry Roberts, coming out of Southwestern State College. He's actually their all-time steals leader. And if he can be kind of one of those guys off the bench who can kind of bring that defensive intensity for this team, that could be a nice handy player to have, to kind of throw another guy, as you kind of set a line change, you know, throw another guy out there as someone to kind of weather the storm and play just really solid defense for them. Upside freshman, Connor Hickman is somebody I'm looking at. I wonder how his minutes will be, but if he does get some minutes, we'll see if he can contribute right away. And then Jason Kent and Darius Hanna, a couple guys who were freshmen last year, now sophomores, showed a ton of promise at the end of the year when their minutes went up, because based on necessity for this team, quite frankly, because their bench was so short. They were showing a lot more ability to score the basketball. Jason Kent, someone I wish that he would put from what looks like he's had a little time in the weight room, so he's a little bit bigger, because he was he kind of had that Kevin Durant body. But I think there's a lot of potential there with Kent as well. So, I mean, at the end of the season, he was averaging 7.8 points per game in 21 minutes a game. And throughout overall through the season, you only had 3 points a game. So you saw that tangible increase over the end of the season.
Yep. So let's get into that non-conference and kind of look at the Braves as a whole. So the two MTE Braves, kind of different this year, which I guess COVID will allow that to happen. But they will start the season at South Dakota State, a couple non-conference games, and then they're going to go to the Paradise Jam, which you've probably already heard if you're listening to our podcast. The Salukis will be in the Paradise Jam as well. They start with Colorado State, and then ideally they win that game and they get to play the Creighton Blue Jays. And then we'll see what happens after that. Then their December 1st game is against the Northern Iowa Panthers in Peoria, Illinois. And that's one that, you know, we've talked about that I've circled on the calendar of a very good bellwether game. Because if you're the Panthers, Bradley's not one of those teams you want to pull, I would say, right out of the gate in early December on the road, especially looking at, you know, how the Panthers are picked to in the season. So kind of thoughts on that December 1st game, Baker?
No, I'm with you. Totally with you. I think it's interesting that that's the matchup for – I think that's going to be more significant when we get into Northern Iowa's preview, because I think it's more significant for them. But it's just for Bradley, you know, you're playing one of the top teams in the league at home. So a really good chance to win a game there. But just kind of looking overall at their non-con, the Paradise Jam, solid tournament. We talked about it with Southern Illinois. Just depends on who you play. I always have it in the back of my mind. It's like, I always want to see these Valley teams play in the non-con, even though I know you hate it, but I'm always rooting for it. Just kind of the back of my mind. But overall, the non-con for Bradley, not great. Coming off a year where last year they played Xavier, they played Missouri. I know it was a pandemic year, so it's a little different, but just looking at this year, I mean, St. Joseph's okay. Toledo's okay. South Dakota State is a decent mid-major. I don't want to sugarcoat them, but outside of the Paradise Jam, there's not a ton to be desired with this non-con.
And we got to talk about the other MTE they're in. It looks like it's a Texas Bowl, a bunch of Texas Sun Bowl teams in the West Star Don Haskins Sun Bowl, Baker. I'm sorry, the West Star Don Haskins Sun Bowl Invitational.
There you go.
MTE. So, yeah, Sam Houston, and then they might play UTEP or North Carolina Central. But yeah, I'm with you. It's an okay non-conference, kind of something you'd expect.
I'd say okay to bad, honestly. If I'm just being honest about the comparison to the rest of the league, I would say it's okay leaning bad.
Yep, that's fine.
Yeah, but I think this is the point where we get into, you know, one of the most interesting parts of what we do here. Last season they were a 6-win team, the Bradley Braves. So the question I have for you, Vance, I have them at 6.5 wins for their over under this season. How many conference wins will the Bradley Braves have?
I'm getting to the point where we're like legitimately in the – we're breaking down our third and fourth teams in these two-a-days that I need to start doing some math on these over-unders, because I'm running out of wins that, like, mathematically it's impossible for me to make these picks. But anyway, with all that to say, I think 7's their number, so I'm going to take the over here. They will be a 7-win conference team.
I think that over is probably the right call here. I think that they have enough. To me, it feels like, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this, kind of overall taking a step back. Bradley, compared to the other four that are kind of in that bottom five, they feel like the upside for this team is higher than anybody else's. Do you agree with that?
I agree completely. I think they're at the top of that, whatever tier we're at now, in that, you know, 6 through 10. I have a lot of faith in Brian Wardle. I'm a Brian Wardle fan. And so really that's where I go, is I'm leaning towards Brian Wardle than I am anything else that I'm seeing on paper with the roster.
Yeah. And I don't want to hold last year against Bradley too much, 'cause I mean, you're coming off two Arch Madness titles. I would like, the only thing I would say for this season for Bradley, it's sometimes, and it's just my perception, the last few years with Bradley, feels like they have those kind of lulls in the middle of their season where they'll lose, you know, 3 or 4 games in a row during the regular season. And yeah, they usually do ramp it back up during Arch Madness time. I'd like to see them avoid that, if at all possible. And I think for them, they can't, I don't think they can afford stuff like that this year. I think, cause they're going to be battling out just to avoid Thursday. Cause I mean, as we've said it, I mean, this league has 10 teams that, you know, Illinois State, everybody talks about 10. Illinois State has a scenario where they could probably get to 6. So it's not like they're that far away from everybody else. So it's going to, we're going to have to win games to get there. So we need to avoid those lulls if you're Bradley.
And maybe this is probably, more of a comment for like the overall preseason episode that we'll do. Sure. But I mean, we're not here to crown anyone, but it almost feels like four of the top seeds are already taken. So you're really only playing for two spots in Arch Madness to get out of Thursday right now. That's kind of how I see it right now.
You know what? And I completely agree with you. And it also feels like, it feels like you have six teams playing for two spots to avoid Thursday. And one of those teams is already an overwhelming favorite to get one of those two, which is your Salukis. So it's, I almost have it even worse that it's five teams playing for one spot.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of basketball would be played, but that's kind of how I see the league, honestly.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think we're pretty much in lockstep on that. But I think Bradley, I think to kind of put a bow on Bradley, just real quick, what do you think their ceiling is? Because to me, I think their ceiling is probably still just that 5-6 range.
I agree. And it's almost just as I might say the same comment with the Salukis. Like, the ceiling is 5 and the floor is 10. Like, I truly think that that top four tier, just with how deep they are, is what it is.
Yep, totally agree.
All right, that has been the Bradley Braves. Before we get to the interview with Seth Tuttle, let's do the breakdown of the Northern Iowa Panthers. In Ben Jacobson's 16th season as head coach, in last year's COVID campaign, they were 10-15, and in Missouri Valley Conference play, they were 8-10. Baker, a little recap on last year's Panthers. Obviously, a down year, losing AJ Green early in the season.
Yeah, you know, this is one of those seasons that it kind of just it started disappointing, and it just snowballed from there. You know, they had that MTE early in the season where they had the three losses in a row: Western Kentucky, St. Mary's, Utah State. Then you had the injury to AJ Green, and things just started to snowball from there for this team. Obviously in a pandemic year, it's no fun to lose your best player. One of the favorites to, you know, be the player of the year again in the Valley. But it was just kind of felt like this team kind of had to find their footing on the go. And it was really tough for them. They had a few bright spots here or there in the conference season, but overall it was more of a disappointing year for them. They did finish the year strong in the Valley regular season, which is, here's where we come to the kind of downer of the whole season last year for you and I. They finished the season winning, including their first round game at Arch Madness, 4 out of their last 5, was ready to play Drake, their in-state rival, and they had to forfeit the game due to COVID, which I think that's been talked about enough, and obviously we'll talk about it with Seth, but it's just interesting that season ended where it did, because it felt like that team was really ramping it up. But when we get to the flip side now, when we talk about the team, we have a lot of these guys coming back. Like, literally the whole team is coming back for this team. And I know you want to tee up the season for this year, but Evan Gager is the only one that's not coming back, who was not really much of a factor last year. So you're bringing back a team that was playing its best basketball at the end of last season. And you're adding who was just named today, I believe, the preseason player of the year in the Missouri Valley. Northern Iowa is going to be tough this year.
They really are, and I almost equate Northern Iowa's season-ish to what we discussed with the Salukis, in that it's almost a reset year. You lost your best player, you had to get some pickup from Austin Fife, and really, you know, kind of your recap, it is, hey, a lot of your young guys got some experience that really they benefited from the COVID year and losing your main player, AJ Green. So, you know, I'm looking at Noah Carter, I'm looking at Nate Heisey, I'm looking at Bowen Bourne, you know, names that are going to be household names, you know, as you and I progress, is that got a lot of great experience last season. And that's kind of the silver lining of the negative year that you and I had, especially with the Arch Madness fiasco and not being able to play.
Yeah, I don't want to downplay it either, because I mean we both said we're sick for those kids, because they were playing such good basketball going in that game. But like, let's looking at this year, I completely agree with you with these guys who got really kind of trial by fire with this team. I thought Austin Fife you could see when we talked about it last year, he struggled when AJ Green went down, because I mean, that's, you go from being kind of that 1-2 punch to struggling, but he was inconsistent throughout the, up to about the midway part of the Valley schedule. But in the final 10 or 7 game, he was 14.5 points per game. I think with a healthy AJ Green, I think that that makes Austin Fife again one of the elite big men in the league going into this season. I think that the other one that I wanted to highlight, obviously, is Bowen Bourne, one of those players that I think that this, he is going to be one of the most interesting players, because I feel like it's going to be unfair if he ends up having a sophomore slump and he gets criticized for that, because he was asked to do so much, and I think that was part of the reason he was freshman of the year, because he had to do so much for this team. His numbers were good, but I think it also went to his role on the team as well, which is why he was picked over Rink Mass. But I think that with AJ Green, I think that he kind of has to take, like, he's not going to get as much usage is what I'm trying to get to compared to AJ. So it'll be really interesting to kind of see how this lineup gels right away.
I agree. You know, just looking at the accolades for this upcoming season. So the Northern Iowa Panthers were picked 3rd. They had some preseason accolades, obviously AJ Green, player of the year on first team. And then also you had Austin Fife on second team. So, I mean, some notoriety there, and they're looking to this season. I mean, I think just from a comment that was made today in the media call, that, you know, that really sticks out, that kind of summarizes kind of Austin Fife last year, is that AJ Green makes everyone else around him better. And I couldn't agree more with that statement. So I think Austin Fife has just a resurgence this year, because he doesn't have to carry a lot of the load this season. And so I think AJ Green, just by being on the court, will help open him up. He's going to be one of the premier big men of the Missouri Valley Conference. And likewise, you know, you got the Burhau, you got the Taiwan Pickfords, you know, that are going to come in this season. And this is just a well-rounded Ben Jacobson coach, UNI Panther team that no one wants to play at any point in the season.
This feels like an NCAA tournament team. And this is the first one that we're reviewing that feels that way. AJ Green, he's probably the best player in the league. I think health is definitely the big issue, though. Mm-hmm. Do we know what he's going to be like? We read everything. I think I've read for weeks that he's never looked better, never looked more athletic. It's different in practice, though, than when you get into the game. So I think it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Trey Burhau, who feels like he's been there forever, but he can fill it up from 3-point range. I would love for him to be a little tick better at 3-pointers. His percentage went down last year, 11%. I don't know if that's maybe he didn't have as many open shots because AJ Green wasn't there to take the bulk of the defenders on, and maybe he got a lot more open looks with AJ on the floor. I would assume he's going to get that back above 40% this year. Noah Carter was one of those players that I thought was just took a good role. It always felt like when Noah Carter was on the floor, he made the team better, and he was always in the plays. I felt like he should have been highlighted more than he even was. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Sorry to cut you off, but I do want to say, Nate Heisey is going to be someone who's going to also have probably a little bit more of a lesser role in this team. But as someone who's a really good defender, he can get into double figures. He did 7 times last year. As a depth guy, you could do a lot worse than Nate Heisey. So this is going to be a really interesting team. I know there's the only other ones I really want to mention was Titan Anderson, who he only played a half a year last year. He's got decent potential, showed a little bit of promise defensively. So we'll wonder what he has. But one thing, I guess the one thing I want to pose to you, you look at this, the quote unquote kind of projected starting five with Bourne, Green, Burhau, Carter, and Fife. That might be the best starting five in the league.
Couldn't agree more. I mean, it just looks like that loaded Northern Iowa team that they feel like they've been in the Valley forever, but you look at, you know, the COVID campaign and they really haven't, which is what's crazy. And so, I mean, yeah, it's one of those that I would say Ben Jacobson has been one of the best coaches that builds a 4-year program. And so it almost looks like Northern Iowa is in that fourth year where they've got a bunch of veteran seniors. And you look around, it's like, well, they've got a lot of redshirt juniors and seniors, yep. And, you know, there's not a ton of experience, but, like, it feels like they do.
Yeah, and no, and I totally agree with you. This is going to be a really good team. They're going to be I think their ceiling is winning the league. Like, I don't think that I think there's a scenario where they win this league. This is
absolutely.
And the one thing I will say, I know we talk about Heisey and Bourne as kind of question what their role is going to be with AJ Green. I think that they're going to be just fine because the two things to remember is AJ Green is an incredibly good basketball player and Ben Jacobson is an incredible coach. So they are going to find ways to use both of them this upcoming season. But let's get into the non-con.
Yeah, so non-conference schedule for them, pretty decent. They've got Vermont at home to start the season. I'm not going to talk about Nicholls State. They go on the road at Arkansas. They're at St. Bonaventure playing the Bonnies. So, we've talked a little bit right before this about them having to go to Bradley on December 1st. They've got Richmond at home. They go to Marshall, and then they're in the Diamond Head. Which is always a good, you know, ESPN, MTE that they have. Liberty.
Christmas.
Yep. Yep.
I love it. I'm excited about that. I'll say this. Their non-con's awesome. Their non-con is this is going to be one of the best ones in the league. Having that stretch, though, I think it's interesting because I want to talk a little bit more about this for the Bradley game's sake. They go to Arkansas, then they go the next week to St. Bonaventure, and then they go to Bradley. Like, they're playing – that's two really tough non-conference games, might be their two toughest non-conference games. And then they go to Bradley, which is a team that's going to be rocking and rolling, ready to go, who doesn't have as strong a non-con. And then even after that, they have Richmond at home, who's obviously going to be a tough game as well. This non-conference, that stretch of four games for you and I is going to tell the story for them, in my opinion. Their Diamond Head Classic, also tough. It doesn't have a ton of flashy names. You got your Stanford, you got Vanderbilt. We don't know what they're going to be like this year. Liberty's kind of had a little bit of a name in the past couple of years. I would say it's a pretty decent, though, MTE. The only thing I want to say about this, and it brings up that interesting debate, is having the two D3 schools on your non-conference. And there's definitely arguments both ways. I know the argument for it is that the D3 schools will not affect your strength of schedule, which definitely helps you in comparison to, say, having one of those bottom 50 teams in the country on your schedule. But at the same time, I think my argument for maybe not doing that would be I would much rather take it out of the committee's hands or the pundits, even as they talk about you when you're on the bubble. I don't love the idea of saying, oh, well, you know, two of these wins don't count. This is a team that plays two D3 schools and kind of have that stigma around them. And I just hate that stigma. What are your thoughts on that, Vance?
Yeah, I mean, as a whole, I don't like it. But for the case of Northern Iowa in this year, I think that their schedule allows for it, especially the Wartburg at the very, you know, right before conference play. That's kind of a get-right after being in Honolulu.
The classic get-right game.
Yeah, the classic get-right game. So, like, I think it works in Northern Iowa's cases. There are other schools out there. That it doesn't work, that it almost feels like you're trying to get to 20 wins on the back of everything, you know? So this, I think you and I get to pass for playing two D3 schools because they're non-con. Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, no, I can see that. And I guess for my only argument would be, you know, if I know that there's a chance I'm going to be on the bubble this season, which I think I think it basically means, you know, the St. Bonaventure, Arkansas, and Richmond games, they got to win two of those three. Got to win two of those three to have a chance to be like a at-large, because I think this is a realistic at-large team in the NCAA tournament. They're going to have to have a good season. I just hate to have them be, you know, sitting there in second place in the Valley where they're talking about them on a college game day and they got to say, oh, well, if you look at their non-conference, I mean, shoot, they didn't play anybody or try to play anybody. And unfortunately for Valley schools, they don't have the luxury of being able to schedule big time teams all the time. And that stinks because we can't just schedule Kentucky all the time. They're not going to come to our building. It's if you get them in a pay game. Yeah, mm-hmm. Sure. But I mean, look at Northern Iowa. They don't even get to play Iowa or Iowa State. They should, but they don't.
I mean, it's as best to say, like, look at Drake last year. I mean, ESPN College Game Day was breaking down wins and losses from November for Drake. I mean, in March they were doing that.
Yeah.
And so it's just like, It's tough, and that could be a whole episode on itself.
I think this is going to be something fun that I want to dig into more, because I think that it'll be interesting to see, you know, what the effect of having the D3 schools is on the strength of schedule, on the net rankings, different things like that. Because to me, you know, they always highlight those quad one and two wins that you can get throughout the regular season and non-con. So. I want to do a little, at some point during the season, we're going to do a deep dive on this, because I think it's an interesting topic for sure. But
yep.
End of the day, it's still a really tough schedule, and this is a really good team. I think that now we're at the point where we need to pose the question for you. The over-under win total for Missouri Valley Conference games, and I think this might be the toughest one that we've had so far. Northern Iowa, 12.5 wins.
So over means they're 13-5 or 12-6. Basically, I'm just trying to put in my head, like, how many losses are they going to have? You know, like, that's what I'm trying to do, like, using, you know, all my fingers. I think they win. 13. I think
you're saying the over.
I think the over.
Okay. No, I like it. This team, I think the ceiling's winning the league.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
The ceiling for this team is winning the league. And to me, the basement, and I don't really want to talk much about this, but the basement's injury is getting them to Thursday.
Yeah.
I think that's the same story as last year. So I think this team has the highest ceiling and highest or lowest base.
Yep. Agreed.
So let's hope for health for AJ Green, because it'll be better for the league if this team goes on a run.
Yep. And we know they can.
Absolutely.
All right, Valley fans, we have a special guest this evening to help us break down the Northern Iowa Panthers in this upcoming 2021-2022 season. We have assistant coach Seth Tuttle of the University of Northern Iowa. I know Valley fans out there should know his name. He played for the Northern Iowa Panthers from 2011 through 2015. In Valley history rankings, he is top 50 in scoring, number 42, and he is top 30 in rebounding. He was the 2012 Freshman of the Year in the Missouri Valley Conference and the 2015 Larry Bird Player of the Year. The Martial Arts Podcast is excited to have Coach Seth Tuttle with us this evening. How are we doing tonight, Coach?
Yeah, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
All right.
That was quite an introduction there.
Well, you know, I remember obviously following the Valley through all those years, but, you know, we got to get all your accolades up there. you know, there's a lot of good ones there, and you've put a lot of paint on both the Salukis and Baker's Redbirds through the years. So we got to give you a credit where credit's due.
Yeah, I had some good teammates.
Hey, so, you know, starting off, we definitely want to dive into your playing career a little bit, just because we had some – just some memories along the way, and get your thoughts on that before we jump into the 21-22 Panther team. So I want to take you back, Seth, to Arch Madness, your senior year. It's halftime of the championship game, and you're down by 22 against the Illinois State Redbirds, who are on the cusp of breaking their NCAA tournament drought. Since 1998, they hadn't been to the tournament, and they're up 22 at half. My question to you is, it took you and your teammates, all of 6.5 minutes to cut that 22-point deficit. What did Coach Jacobson say at halftime?
Yeah, so this is a crazy – this is crazy, right? Coach Jake was actually sick that entire trip to St. Louis, like really sick. Like he didn't spend any time with us. He was trying to stay away from us. He didn't want anybody on the team to get sick. So like film studies, pregame, for the most part, like our pregame meals, postgame meals, all that stuff, he just wasn't there. And he was really under the weather. So it was really weird. You know, we came out. And when we got jumped early by that team, and we weren't playing great, and at halftime, like you'd think, you know, your coach might get on you, and he might try to fire you up, and he was very mellow, very calm, and he just said, I know exactly what he said, but basically what he said was, listen, if we just calm our minds and we just play basketball the way we play basketball with how good of a team that we have, this is not an issue. And so it was a special moment because at the, at that time I learned a lot about who I wanted to be as a basketball coach, for my future. And then I also just, I watched our team just look at him and just believe everything he said. And it was a change of like nothing more than what I'm talking right now was his tone the entire time. And he just said, listen, fellas, who we have on our team, how we play, how much we care about each other, just go out and start playing Panther basketball. This is going to flip really, really quickly. And sure enough, it did. I mean, I got a couple easy ones to kind of get us moving. And then Bohannon and Jeremy and Wes just kind of took off for us. And then it was a heck of a second half, a heck of an ending in Valley play for us. That was the first time I had even won a game in St. Louis was that trip my senior year. So it was something that we really talked a lot about it. So for us to be able to kind of cut the nest down and finally get that off our backs, something we wanted to do, it was a heck of a night. I'm sorry about your squad, man.
Yeah, I'll say you guys. That was the quickest turnaround I've ever seen in my entire life, and it was just like it was a quick death at least. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I'm not entirely sure. I'm not entirely sure what we were thinking. I guess we ran a zone that worked in the second half at Illinois State that same year to kind of get us back, and Nate Buss hit that game winner in the corner.
Yep.
And then we came out in this game with the same exact zone, and we don't run zone. We never run zone, right? We're a man-to-man. Coach Jake's a man-to-man team. So I'm like, what in the world? I'm like, okay, we're going to do it. He said we're going to run this 3-2 zone, and I think we might have even done like a full court, like picked up full court for a little while. And I'm like, what are we doing? And we did it, obviously, and sure enough, they hit a couple of big threes, and then some of their guys got going, and the momentum was definitely theirs, and it took halftime to kind of just have Coach Jake be able to say a few words and kind of get everybody just to calm down and just understand how good of a basketball team we had that year.
That's amazing. So I mean, how does Arch Madness and maybe that moment just rank in your playing career?
It's up towards the top for sure. I mean, you go to college, go to the NCAA tournament. Right. Yeah. I mean, that's why you go to college. It's a big reason why kids choose to go to specific schools. Right. They want that opportunity to play in the NCAA tournament. They want to have a team that's going to take them or give them that opportunity to play in the NCAA tournament. And so for us to go down there, and like I mentioned, I was 0-3. We were 0-3 down in St. Louis. So that ate at me. Right. As a competitor, like that ate at me big time. And so finally that first one to get off our back, like that was special. And then all of our fans, all of our families, like everybody was down there. And it felt like from the game one, there was already a lot of Panther fans down there. And by the time game two came around and we kind of got that monkey off our backs, like it was, everybody was down there. So like you turn left and you got your friends, and you turn right and you got your family. And it was like a whole Panther Nation deal. And it was something we didn't get to experience yet because we hadn't even won a game. So for the most part, Panther fans have been going down there with us and packing up and going home that night or the next night. So for us to kind of experience that was so special, and finally to get the championship, get the trophy, and know that we were already going to play in the NCAA tournament anyways. We were whatever, we were at like 10th in the nation at that point, but just to solidify it and get a championship, it was something we chased. So it was a special deal.
Yeah, maybe just a reminder to the fans, you know, after the Arch Madness win, the Panthers did go on as a 5 seed, and they beat Wyoming in their opening round game. So kind of back to your playing and, you know, maybe around the Valley, always curious from a player's perspective, are there certain venues and maybe arenas or away games in the MVC that when you know you're going there, where's the hardest place as a player to play at?
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting question, I guess, because you could always, for one, there's not an easy road game in the Valley. I'll give the credit to the Valley for that. The coaching staffs, the players at the Valley, it is hard to win on the road in the Valley. Well coached teams, and you have to be on your game every single night. For us, for some reason, and I don't know if it was just atmospheres, or it's kind of a goofier place to play, I guess, or it was for us as players. Was Evansville. For some reason, it just didn't feel like we could ever kind of get like our juices flowing there. And I don't know if we just ate a big meal like the night before or like in the hotel. I don't know what it was, but it felt like for some reason Evansville threw us off. Southern, I know this will make you happy. That was kind of a dangerous spot for us. Like their style of play kind of threw us off a little bit. They'd go small and play really small. And so that would throw us off a little bit. But obviously when I was going through, like Wichita State was a place. I never won there. That still eats in me today. That makes me mad just saying it right now. So obviously when you're thinking about the toughest spots to play and the greatest venue and arena and fan base, like that place was rocking every single night. So that was something that was, I love to play in those games. That's what makes it fun. That's what makes college basketball fun. But for sure that was a night that was circled and you had to be prepared to hear some stuff for sure.
And I think your senior year, I believe, wasn't it, didn't College Game Day go to,
because
I think you guys were both in the top 12 or 15 or so. And I think you guys had the noon game on ESPN, right?
Yeah, I think we were like – it was like the 10-12 matchup, and it was game day. Yeah, I walked – so we're in there, and you get your jersey on, your shoes on, you walk out to the court, and I'm walking out there, and a man I've never met before, he comes up to me, he goes, you know, you're a pretty big topic today. And I look at him like, what are you talking about? And he points over, he goes, see that stack over there? And I'm like – I look over, and there's a stack of – I mean, hundreds of posters. And on the posters were apparently inappropriate things about me, about that they couldn't show on TV, or that ESPN didn't feel comfortable like showing the crowd with it in there. So I was like, this is awesome. And I'm all for it. I love that type of stuff. I think the more the fans get involved, and obviously not inappropriate stuff, but like the more the fans get involved, it just makes college basketball so special. So that was I'll never forget that day. I'll never forget it, man. And we lost, and it was disappointing, but it was a battle. So,
yeah, it's probably good for the fans here. We're on video, but as I can see in the background, he's got his jerseys on the wall. You know, unfortunately, we don't have any of those posters, you know, to really get a feel for what the flavor of those were. It doesn't look like Seth kept any of those and took them back to Cedar Falls after that one.
Yeah, I didn't take. I didn't snag that one. I'm just a personal person here, so I'm going to share this. We went to VCU that year, and in their student section, right behind the when you're shooting free throws, right, they had a big fat head of my sister. My sister was at the game that day with my parents. She went and got it after the game, and she still has it. So that is 100% accurate. And again, like that's, I loved it. Like I started laughing immediately. I'm like, this is awesome. Those two or three kids in the student section were awesome for that. So, and I love it, man. That's what makes it fun.
Yeah. I mean, that's college basketball in a nutshell. Hey, thank you for sharing those stories. You know, before we jump into the 2021, 2022 Panther team, let's maybe talk real quick through your transition into coaching. So kind of question top of mind for me and Baker were, what's the difference between Coach Jacobson as a player and now, you know, as a peer coach and leading the team?
Yeah, you know, the craziest thing, I guess, to me is I haven't felt much difference. He's a calm, strict, right? Like he has high expectations, and he expects a lot from his players and staff. Both very similar, but he's a family first dude, and down to earth, and doesn't take things too serious, and loves to have fun and loves to win. You felt that all as a player, and I feel it right now as an assistant coach. So he's I've been super lucky and blessed that I got to play for him, and now I get to learn the other side of this whole deal, getting to coach with him, and he gives players and coaches a lot of rope to kind of be who they are, and do things their kind of way, just as long as it obviously fits his mold of what he sees and how he wants it to go. So that's all great, and so honestly, I feel like it's been a pretty easy transition, because it's kind of the same. He just treats people the right way, no matter who you are. So
we got to dive into this year's team, but I think before we dive into this year's team, I kind of think it kind of starts with last year, with playing, you know, you're coaching a team during a pandemic. And I guess I have two quick questions about last year's team, just kind of leading into this year. First thing was, when AJ Green went down, I mean, how difficult was it for the team to kind of find their way? Because it felt like there were times it was really tough at first, because, you know, you plan to have your best player and now you got to play a different style. And a lot of players who maybe weren't going to have as many minutes had to step up and play more. So what was the challenges like to kind of shift focus on how you guys played?
Yeah. You know, obviously no team is going to be prepared for that, right? Like that's a curveball you ain't going to hit. Losing your best player, losing the guy who touches the ball every time, losing the guy who makes so many plays, the leader of your team. So no team can be prepared for that. What makes it even harder for us was our experience level last year around AJ. AJ went out. We had another guard, Antoine Kimmins, who made the right decision, went home for COVID purposes to help his family out. So at that point, that leaves us with two true freshmen at the 1 and 2, who are really good basketball players. But everybody knows freshmen are freshmen, right? You learn something new every single day. And boy, did they learn a lot last year, because they got about 35 minutes per game and they were just thrown in the fire. And it's so awesome that they get this year back, because basically they got a redshirt year where they got to play 35 minutes a game, and that's a heck of a deal for those two. But for our team, it was a grind trying to get them caught up to speed, trying to get our team kind of to gel a little bit after losing our main two guards who were coming back who have any experience whatsoever. And then we had a couple other things that happened within our team that just threw off any rhythm, right? And for the most part, it felt like it was the longest season in the world, just trying to hold on for dear life. And a huge props to our guys, because by the end of the year, we were playing much better basketball. By the end of the year, we felt like we were going to beat Drake. And as long as you have those feelings, it means you did something and your team was going somewhere and you were improving, which is a big deal. So, a crappy way to end it last year, but I'm just glad. I'm hoping COVID's done for real, because the last two seasons for the Panthers have ended in a pretty brutal way.
Yeah, no, and I, you know, you mentioned the Drake game never was, and it was interesting. You guys kind of went into that game, had won 4 out of 5. Your one loss was against Drake, who was a tournament team, and you took him to the wire. It was a close game, but I just curious. I mean, I don't know how much you really can talk about it, but kind of talk about that day with the, you know, the game being canceled with Drake. I mean, that's just a heartbreaker, because as Valley fans of kind of neutrals going in that game, it felt like this could be either team's game. You know, Northern Iowa was actually you were kind of hitting that stride right at the end of the season. So it had to be crushing for the guys.
It was super crushing, right? Like, I mean, we woke up that morning, walking into the team room, like the team lobby area, meeting room, whatever, for breakfast, and everybody's got smiles on, and like it was go time, man. And you can just feel it, right? It's just a feeling when our program kind of gets rolling, you can feel it. And Coach Jake is great at letting the snowball just keep getting bigger, and it felt like that, right? We were building something, and then all of a sudden, news came that we might have to forfeit. Then for a while there was news that it was more about there was going to be specific people with the contact tracing. And then we were looking around like, man, who is it? And then all of a sudden we found out it was going to be like 12 of us. We're like, how is this even, like, we're going to have 6 guys to play. And it's like, what in the world's going on? And sure enough, like we ended up we stayed and we went through the entire day. We get to the arena, and all of a sudden, like, where they have us in a locker room, and they come in and said that the St. Louis Board of Health, or whoever it was that made the decision, said this isn't happening. So we were all in the locker room basically getting ready to rock and roll, and they said this ain't happening. So it was so we loaded up, went back to the hotel, and there were a bunch of emotions in that team room. So It ain't ever easy. I've been there. I've been there to have a season come to an end. And when it comes to an end, when you felt, and I haven't had one, I guess, that ended that way, but when you felt like you kind of got something going and then you didn't get to go until you lost, that stinks. And I could feel that for each one of our players. So last year was very unfortunate.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I think it was unfortunate for every fan in the Valley, you know, and especially because the year prior, I mean, you guys didn't even get to find out what your fate would have been. I mean, you guys would have been on the bubble. You still didn't even get to find. So there's kind of that hollow feeling with this team. But let's talk about this year because, I mean, you guys are locked and loaded again. I think the first question I have, obviously, it's a kind of a two-parter. One, how's AJ Green looking? And two, how do you expect him to kind of gel with some of these newcomers, specifically Bowen Bourne and Heisey? How is he going to gel with them? Because, I mean, let's face it, those two are going to have to kind of – they're going to have a lot less touches than they did last year, and then there's going to have to be kind of that good balance. So how do you see those guys meshing with AJ this year?
Yeah, so AJ looks great. AJ's back. He's passed everything that he's needed to pass. He's running up and down. He's more athletic. He's stronger. He tried to dunk on a dude in practice about a week and a half ago, which is something he'd never done. I actually froze, and I'm pretty sure it shocked him. He looked right at me. We have a great relationship, AJ and I, and we just looked at each other. We were like, did he really just try that? So he's feeling good, right? And so a large part of kind of what we've been doing right now is more so than what we have done in the past is we're getting them more reps up and down the court together. Usually we like to break things down quite a bit more, but Coach Jake felt like the more reps that they can get playing with one another, the more they can build that chemistry. And chemistry is a big part of what our focus is for this upcoming year because of how many people we have on our team who think they're going to play, who probably deserve to play. I mean, right now I could name 8 or 9 guys that I can make an argument every other day for that should be in our starting lineup, which is a great problem to have. It's an interesting challenge to make sure that we piece it together the right way and that our guys understand and form it a very tight bond, because that's what's going to allow this team to have the amount of success that they all want to reach the goals that they set at the beginning of the year just amongst themselves. So,
yeah, no doubt about it. And I think Bowen Bourne's the one that I kind of look at as, you know, playing with someone like AJ Green. I think both of them out there at the same time, it might unlock another part of his game as well. Kind of having a little bit, because, you know, as a freshman last year, right, having to run the show, having a little bit of pressure taken off him with AJ out there is going to help. I do want to ask, is there any status update with Bowen Bourne? Do you have any update on him? Do we know if he's going to be ready for the non-con? I know that he got injured in practice the other day, or at least that's what I heard. Do you have any update on him?
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure what I can say. He did get injured a little bit. Sounds like he'll be good to go. If he misses the first couple, he'll miss the first couple. If not, he won't. He's ahead of schedule, I guess, in terms of what I've been told from our training person. So it's the good thing is it's not stopping him from staying in shape. It is part of his hand. So like he's running and stuff. Like awesome. He's a warrior, right? You guys probably don't know Bowen. You're not supposed to know Bowen the way we do. He's almost a little crazy in terms of like, he loves this, and it's those type of kids that we love anyways, but Bowen is like top notch in those categories. So he'll be ready to go. As soon as the doctor says, yep, we're good. Like he'll be ready to go. I have a feeling it's going to be sooner rather than later. So that's great. And about Bowen and Nate, those two have done a phenomenal job of first of all, they already understand the situation with AJ being out last year and their minutes, and like they're very well aware of that, and they become aware of that with the entire summer leading into that season, working out with AJ, watching AJ, knowing AJ. Bowen, a big reason Bowen came to you and I was for the opportunity to play and work out with AJ, right? To learn from AJ. So they're all well aware of AJ and what he brings to the table and who he is and what he means to our team and what he's earned and deserves with our team. So in terms of meshing and understanding a few less touches, a few less minutes, maybe they're completely okay in understanding where they sit. And that's just speaks wonders to those two. They're high level kids, coach's dream kids, right? Like that's just who they are. So in terms of those two meshing with AJ, that's not a concern I'm having at the moment. So
that's awesome. Yeah. It's going to be interesting to kind of see how that goes, but yeah, the last year those minutes that they got were invaluable. I mean, they had to get thrown to the wolves, and that's tough. And I mean, both of them, I can't say enough about it. I think that they both kind of helped weather the storm. But one other guy on the team that I wanted to ask you a little bit about is Austin Fife. As a big guy yourself, I was curious, how often do you guys work together? I feel like there would be like kind of a good relationship between the two of you, working on his game. And last year it felt like, you know, when AJ went down, there were some, you know, some rocky games here and there, but toward the end of the season, God, he just hit a stride where, I mean, last seven games, he was 14.5 points a game. And it just felt like, it felt like that same Austin who was just tearing it up at the end.
Yeah. So I mentioned a little bit that we had some hiccups other than AJ and Antoine, and Fife was one of them, with some health things going on. COVID impacted him a little bit harder than some others, and he was battling through some of that stuff. And everything, like the rhythm of everybody was thrown off, that it was just such a strange year. Yes, I have a great relationship with Fife. Love working with him. He's a heck of a basketball player. He's a heck of a person. I expect a lot from him this year. I think he's going to have a great year. I think we're going to have a lot of fun working with each other. And you know, I give him this idea and he gives me this idea, and just throwing ideas off each other and learning from each other. It's been a lot of fun, and I expect that we have a lot more fun this year together. So he's done a phenomenal job. He's doing a great job in terms of slowly taking some more leadership on with our team, which is important with so many guys like we talked about. It's a lot better if you have one or two kind of main voices that the team can kind of rally around and kind of be like, okay, this is kind of our guy. He's going to be our base. And right now, Fife's done a nice job in terms of being that guy, being a solid, steady voice for our team.
All right, I gotta hop in real quick. Okay, you two are on the block doing some drills. Do you have a pad or you no pad when you're going up against Austin Fife?
No, Bones way before cones, buddy. I'm involved. No, nope, I don't believe in that. Nope, can't. I'm a. You learn from game-like situations, and otherwise you're just working on a very base skill. But if you're going to get a lot better at something, you're going to learn from a game-like situation. So, no, I'm straight up. It's war.
Straight up D.
That's war, awesome, man. So my favorite days is when I get the ball and they have to learn how to play defense.
That's awesome. I got one last question about this year, and honestly, people might not care. It might be just a selfish one for me, but I'm just curious, as someone who played in the Valley and is coached in the Valley as well, what is your thoughts? And I know you're not going to talk about Bradley, because I know you're not going to talk about any other teams in the league, but just curious your thoughts about playing a conference game in the middle of the non-conference. I just curious, as when you and the coaching staff see that, are you guys excited about that? Or are you kind of just like, don't love it? I mean, I was just curious. Did you guys have any thoughts when you saw that come out?
We talked about it a little bit, but I don't know if there was until we have the experience this year. I think it would be unfair for me or anybody really to say, oh, I don't like that or I like that. It seems a little goofy, I guess, just because it's just one game in the middle of what is that, the beginning of December?
Yeah, in the middle of your toughest stretch, too.
Yeah. So, it's until we experience it, I guess this year, I can't give you a fair assessment of it or how I don't really know, but it feels kind of weird, but I don't have any issues throwing some curveballs and changing things up. At the end of the day, the game's going to be played. So whether it's then, or if it's in February, those two teams are going to have to match up and figure it out. So we're just excited for the season to get going. At this point, anything that's close to normal in terms of not having to go to place and play back-to-back games and have no fans and anything that's even close to normal, we're all in for, because last year was was different. It was so different, man. It's hard to get in any rhythm at all. And I feel for the guys so much.
Yeah. I mean, at least it's not back-to-backs. You know, I guess we'll play in December, November, whenever. But speaking of the Northern Iowa Panthers, they do kick off the season on November 9th against Nicholls State. And, Coach, I know you are ready for that to get here.
No, 100%, man. We got our first scrimmage coming up this week, and I can't wait. I just want to watch us play against another team. I'm tired of watching us play against ourselves. I want to see where we are. So we can kind of get a good judgment for what we got to work on and what we're doing well right now, what we're not doing well, and what we need to work on and fix up a little bit, tweak here and there. This scrimmage, we got one more, and then it's go time, man. War time. And there's not much better than that.
Hey, thank you so much for joining us. I can honestly say I'm probably going to use bones, not cones now, moving forward. I will absolutely love that. But once again, thank you for joining us, Assistant Coach Seth Tuttle for the Northern Iowa Panthers. Thanks for being on the podcast today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Before we close off this episode and Baker tells you where you can find us, you know, new little segment, kind of accountability segment here that we're going to do each episode. I have a stack of media guides that, you know, cover multiple years in the Missouri Valley Conference, just ones I've acquired thanks to the Baker family, including John and his parents, who have graciously provided those to me. And I was like, we got to put these to use. And we have this website that every time and again I blog, and I really like diving into Missouri Valley history. So I was like, you know what, let's make this random. And so I have labeled all of the media guides. I've given it a number. So I'm going to need Baker to give me a number 1 through 20 at this time.
Go 17, Todd Helton.
Okay, 17.
Real quick, Todd Helton played for who?
The Colorado Rockies, just because I know that. Look at you. They're your team. Yeah, first base,
there you go. Yeah, Look at you.
All right, so I'm pulling it out. That is the 1988-89.
Oh boy.
Missouri Valley preview. It looks like there are 8 teams in the Valley at that time. So I am going to need a page number from you. 76 page numbers. What is it? What do you want? 1 through 76.
Let's go 50.
50. All right. I'm going to flip to it. With my luck, it's going to be an advertisement.
Is it Diet Pepsi? Because that was like the only advertiser on everything Valley back in the day.
All right. So on page 50, you have Stan Albeck had things pointing his way during Bradley's MVC championship season a year ago. Okay, but what does that impact the blog? All right. So in the next blog that I'll put up, probably over the weekend, I will dive into the 1987-1988 MVC statistics. And on this page, we have team conference game statistics. I'm going to find something from this page and blog about it.
I love it. That's an awesome idea. I was wondering where this was going. This is awesome. I love this. I had no clue what you were doing.
I told Baker, I was like, all right, we have something in the episode. Just go with it. I thought this up one night, and it's kind of accountability. So blog a little bit more and dive into the history that I actually love to do. So I will find something from page 50 in the 1988-89 basketball media guide, essentially.
That's awesome. And you can find that at marchtothearchpodcast.com, where Vance will put up some blogs. We'll do some fun stuff on there this year. Try to be a little bit more interactive with us, with y'all on the website. You can also find us on Twitter at marcharchpod, at marcharchbaker. Marchtothearchmailbag is at gmail.com is also a place you can send us your feedback via email. We definitely will reply to you. And looking forward to next week. And next week we have an awesome set of teams. It's going to be Valparaiso. We're going to be heading to Indiana. We're going to go to Valparaiso and the Evansville Purple Aces. We also have a pretty good interview lined up for next week as well, which you guys will all look forward to, but we won't give it away yet. So everybody, hope everybody has a great week and look forward to those teams.
And with that, go Valley.
Start talking about the Valley. Why not?